This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss amongst themselves on every healthcare topic imaginable. We let you in on those private discussions so you'll be armed with the information that you need to fight for your healthcare freedom. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a non-for-profit, tax-deductible organization that was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going and offer solutions that are very different than what's been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of healthcare you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. This foundation is going around the country fighting for the healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to their website, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow these people to carry on the fight on your behalf. You might not think you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be someday, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you when that time comes. Well, I'd like to wish everybody a happy new year, and we're going to kick off this first show of the year with a very special guest. We've had policy shows for the last 6 months and talked about a whole array of topics. This is the first time that we've ever had someone who is involved in the healthcare fight in Washington, D.C., on our show. And it's an honor to have with us today Congressman Tom Price from the 6th Congressional District in Georgia. He's just won his 6th term in Congress to serve in the 114th Congress, and he has a tremendous resume. He is the I can spend the next 5 minutes going through it, but I don't want to cut into his time. But suffice it to say that he is very much engaged in health care, and we can talk about a whole array of matters about what's going on in Washington, but we're going to focus on what we do on this show, which is healthcare. And there's nobody who's better suited to talk about it than Congressman Price, who is an orthopedic surgeon, and he is the former chairman of the Republican Study Group, which came out with a plan, an alternative health care plan, back in the 111th Congress. So that was a few Congresses ago. And this is still out there and hopefully something that we'll talk about in this hour and try to talk about what is possible. And Congressman Price is the now incoming Budget Committee Chairman, which is a very important role in Washington, and hopefully we'll see some good things come out of this Congress. So without any further ado, please let me take this opportunity to welcome you into the Doctor's Lounge, Tom.
Thanks, Hal, so much. It's good to be back. It's good to be in the Doctor's Lounge. It's great to be back in Atlanta. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and same to you. Tom, we have I'm gonna just get this off the ground right away. There's people out there who are unhappy with Obamacare, and I think that this last election was a mandate that was not that we want to have things continue the way that they've continued, but it is to stop what's going on and turn things around. And I think that healthcare, Obamacare, was a central part of the message that was sent by voters this last election. Tell us what your take of what is possible now in 2015 with a Republican Congress.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think Obamacare really is kind of the poster child for the overreach that people across this country have felt from Washington. And healthcare, as a formerly practicing physician, and you as a physician, and the Docs for Patient Care do a wonderful job in representing the physician-patient relationship that is absolutely vital to quality of health. health care. Everybody understands that Obamacare, the reason that they don't like it, that we don't like it, is because it violates all of the principles that we hold dear as it relates to health care, whether it's increasing access, increasing affordability, increasing quality, increasing choices. It does none of those things. Costs are going up, access is going down, quality is going down, and choices are clearly being limited. So when we look, step back and say, okay, what would you do? What would you put in place? As you mentioned, you were kind of mentioned the piece of legislation that I've now been carrying for three Congresses, and we will reintroduce it in the current Congress. We call it the Empowering Patients First Act, and it's a piece of legislation that would make certain that individuals are able to gain the coverage, health coverage, that they want, not that the government forces them to buy. We solve the insurance challenges because there are a lot of insurance challenges out there, but we do so in a way that doesn't put Washington in charge of health care. And then we have all sorts of ways to save hundreds of billions of dollars, literally, in our health care system that are being wasted day in and day out. And we do it by making certain that we focus on the patient. Health care is one of those areas where patients and families and doctors ought to be in charge, not Washington, D.C., not insurance companies, not anybody else. When you go to your doctor, you ought to know that he or she is looking out for your best interests and has the ability to recommend and be able to carry out what you and your doctor believe is the best thing for you, not with anybody else getting into that equation. So I believe that that we've seen all sorts of challenges in the area of Obamacare. That's why the discontent with the program continues to increase. And those challenges and the destruction of that physician-patient relationship provide an opening to bring about positive reform, patient-centered reform. And I think that's what we'll be working for. I'm hopeful that the president will recognize that the kinds of things that he's done that have destroyed the ability for people to gain quality health care and access to that health care will allow him to see that we need to move in a different direction.
So the mantra has been repeal Obamacare, repeal and replace. The rhetoric coming from the left, the rhetoric coming from the media has been, well, you know, repeal and replace is all very good, but the Republicans haven't really come up with anything. Comment on that.
Yeah, well, it's just it's so disheartening when you see the kind of deceit and misinformation that's out there across the airwaves, and it has been continued to be promoted from the White House that the Republicans don't have a plan. Well, it simply is not true. In fact, there are multiple plans that are out there. Last Congress, over 160 pieces of legislation introduced by Republicans in the House of Representatives. Now, some folks say, well, you've got 160 different pieces of legislation. That's as good as having none, because we haven't coalesced around one. But I'll tell you what we have coalesced around, and that is the principles that I talked about. Healthcare ought to be affordable for everybody. It ought to be accessible for everybody. It ought to be of the highest quality, and it ought to provide the greatest number of choices to the American people. If we stay true to those principles, there are all sorts of pieces of legislation that address those kinds of things. I mentioned the Empowering Patients First Act that we have introduced in the last three Congresses, and we'll reintroduce it in this Congress. What it does is allows for every single American, provides an incentive, a financial incentive for every single American to gain the kind of coverage that they want, not that the government forces them to buy. And we do that through a series of tax deductions, tax credits, refundable tax credits, advanceable refundable tax credits. In fact, we believe we'd get more folks covered than Obamacare because people would have an incentive to purchase coverage, a financial incentive to purchase coverage, not just a health incentive, but a financial incentive, and we provide the wherewithal for folks to be able to do that. No mandate, doesn't force anybody to do anything, but it makes it so that people out there across this land say, hey, it makes more sense for me to be covered, have health coverage financially than not. In addition, we address the incredible problems in the insurance industry that bring about a system that doesn't have patients at the center. The two biggest ones are portability and pre-existing. Portability. Nobody in our system ought to lose their insurance because they change their job or they lose their job. That's a holdover from a bygone era, and it simply doesn't exist anymore. It used to be that if you had an employer, if your boss's company provided you insurance, health insurance, you stayed with that company forever. That's the way it used to be. It's the way it was for your folks, the way it was for my folks. That's just not true anymore. Young people today, the estimates are that they'll have between 12 and 15 different employers in their professional lifetime. There's no reason they ought to have 12 to 15 different health care policies. That doesn't make any sense. It may work for the employer, may work for the insurance company, may even work for the government. Doesn't work for the patient. So what we do is very simple. We say, regardless of who's paying for your health coverage, you own it. It's like your 401k plan. It's like the kinds of things that so if you change your job, you lose your job, you move somewhere else, you just take your health coverage with you. So it's always yours, and you can plug it in where you end up. The other big insurance challenge that we have in this country, and it still exists, and that is the issue of pre-existing illness. No system that we ought to support should price somebody out of the market, make it so they can't afford health coverage if they get a bad diagnosis. And every one of us, each one of us, may wake up one morning, go to our doctor, go to the hospital, and find out that we've got a horrendous diagnosis that we and our family have to deal with. We ought not also get a note from our insurance company that says, oh, by the way, this is what you owe and you can't afford a coverage anymore. That's, again, a system that may work for hospitals, it may work for government, it may work for insurance companies, it doesn't work for patients. So what the way that the Obamacare addresses it is that the government forces insurance companies to cover people with pre-existing illnesses. Now, people say, well, isn't that a great idea? Well, it might be in the short term, but what happens when the government decides to provide care? Again, a system that works may work for the government, insurance companies, doesn't work for patients.
And that's what they do in Great Britain, by the way.
Exactly, exactly. And many other systems that have what some folks hold up as vaunted systems of health care that take care of their people. What they don't look at the fine print, and many of the systems that have fine print that say the government decides whether or not you get care. I'm not in favor of a system like that, and I know you're not, and docs for patient care aren't.
Right, and what they're doing, they're not treating patients, they're treating populations.
Exactly.
And that never is a good thing for individual patients.
Exactly. So how do you solve this without putting Washington in charge? Well, what our bill says is that if you step back and you make the right diagnosis of the problem on pre-existing illness, the individuals that are threatened with being priced out of the market are those who purchase their insurance through the individual and the small group market. It's the mom and pop stores on the corner, it's the small businesses that have 2, 3, 4, 5 employees, and they're out there with just those 2, 3, 4, 5 people trying to buy insurance in the insurance market, and therefore their pool, the group of individuals that they're able to access, is just that one sole group, that small group, and therefore the insurance has to cost more from spreading the risk standpoint. So what we do is say all of those individuals, about 18 million people in this country, ought to be able to access an entire pool of millions of other Americans. So they get that purchasing power of millions. We call them individual membership associations. It's something new. It doesn't exist right now, but it could exist if we had a system that said we want to focus on patients being in charge of health care and nobody else. Then one individual's adverse health status doesn't drive up the cost for anybody else because you've got enough people to spread the risk. That's the way you solve health care challenges in our country without putting the government in charge.
So that's a great segue about how to talk about the people who aren't paying for their insurance. And what I'm referring to is Medicare and Medicaid. And in the next segment, I think we'll focus on what to do about government plans. This is Dr. Hal Schurz with my guest Tom Price in the Doctor's Lounge.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. Learn strategies to protect you and your family in the age of Obamacare.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is Hal Schurz with my guest, Representative Tom Price, and we are talking healthcare, of course. So we left off talking about how patients pooling together will enable risky diagnoses to no longer be a problem for payers, and the elephant in the room is Medicare and Medicaid, mm-hmm. and that's something that the libertarians want to see completely eliminated. And then you've got people on the left who want to increase entitlements, and then there's the middle, which realizes that seniors were promised a plan. They paid into it their entire career, and there are people who exist in our country in poverty who just are needing help. Some people are saying charity can help them, but in reality that's not going to do it entirely. And so what do we do about these big government programs that are going bankrupt? Medicare is, I think that the CBO has revised their estimates with the $713 right. billion that was sucked out of it. So I think they say 2024 now. Right. Is that correct? And so that's a program that has a limited shelf life, and Medicaid is probably one of the worst health care plans that there is.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Well, I think it's important that people appreciate that if no changes are brought about to either Medicare or Medicaid, which is apparently the president's plan because he hasn't proposed any, and our friends on the left, it's apparently their plan because they haven't proposed any. If nothing is done, these programs go broke. They go insolvent. What does that mean? That means that those programs, within a relatively short period of time, 2024 for Medicare, will no longer be able to provide the services that we have as a society have promised those beneficiaries. I don't know about you, but when I talk to seniors across this country, literally, they tell me, look, that I paid into that system. That's the system that I was told was going to be there for me when I became a senior.
Right.
What isn't talked about is the amount of money that seniors actually do put into the program and how much they get out of the program. Mm-hmm. And this isn't belittling anybody, but the average senior couple puts about $100,000 over their lifetime into Medicare. The average senior couple takes out, in terms of services, about $300,000.
Right.
Those are ballpark figures.
Yes.
What that means, as you well know, and as anybody who looks at those numbers, isn't to disparage the individuals, the seniors who put that money in. It simply says that you can't have a system in place that has three-for-one providing of benefits to an individual for one of putting into it, and have the demographics of our society changing where we have 78 million baby boomers about to come into the system, and have it work from a financial standpoint. That's why this thing's going broke. Now, that doesn't mean that you throw up your hands and say, well, we can't do anything, or we can't provide services for folks. It means that you step back and you say, how do we save and strengthen and secure both Medicare and Medicaid for the populations that they need to serve? That's what we have been doing. And if you step back and look at it, there are wonderful ways to be able to save and strengthen these programs that actually secure the program, provide greater choices for the individuals receiving the care in both Medicare and Medicaid, and greater financial predictability for the federal government. In the area of Medicare, they say that 70 is the new 40. There are millions, literally millions of individuals between the age of 62 or 65 and 75 or even 80 who are spry, are fit, have relatively few health challenges. Their health status looks like somebody much younger. There's no reason why those individuals ought to be saddled with the kind of Medicare program that we have, because some other program may be much more flexible and responsive to them. So we believe in a voluntary way not forcing anybody to do anything. If seniors want to remain in Medicare, then that's a wonderful thing. The problem is that Medicare is going to provide fewer and fewer and fewer services, and the narrowing of the networks that we're already seeing, it's going to provide fewer physicians that seniors are going to be able to see because of the financial challenges. So every senior, we believe, ought to be able to have the voluntary option of taking that resource, that Medicare resource, predictable resource, and using it in essence as a defined contribution plan to be able to move it to purchase coverage that they want. They ought to be able to supplement that if they want as well, so that the system becomes much more responsive to the patient. We don't want a system that necessarily just works for government, that just works for insurance companies. We want a system that works for patients.
And many of those patients are, or no, they're not necessarily patients, but many of those individuals are actually still working.
Sure they are.
And so means testing, that was one of the proposals from the last Congress in the Ryan plan that said that we should go ahead and, we don't want to take away benefits from people, but people like Warren Buffett shouldn't be receiving Medicare.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense at all. And the way that you get around that, again, is voluntarily. Allow individuals voluntarily. That's a key, because the folks on the other side of the aisle, they always say we're going to be forcing seniors to do this or that. Nobody's going to be forcing any senior to do anything. We believe, however, that if we set up a system that provides greater choices, greater quality, greater access, larger networks, ability to see more doctors, that seniors will in fact flock to a system that is more responsive to them as opposed to responsive to the federal government.
And so let's just, before we get off the Medicare, so one of the big problems with Medicare right now, as you mentioned, is access. And there are more and more doctors who are dropping off Medicare because of the unpredictability. Why don't you comment on that and what that problem, what that challenge is for seniors, and how do we fix that?
Well, it's unpredictability, but it's also a regulatory oppression that is occurring right now. The federal government is trying to define under this administration absolutely every single incident of care in this country for seniors, and you can't do that without having the kind of regulatory oppression that makes it unpalatable for physicians to even practice. Many, you know this well, and I suspect you've talked about it on your program. My former colleagues in the orthopedic arena, and many doctors across this country who provide services to Medicare patients. And remember that it's not all doctors that see Medicare patients. Those that have a practice that would normally treat seniors, one out of three of them have limited the number of Medicare patients that they see. One out of eight have said, I can't see any more Medicaid patients at all. Not because they don't want to treat seniors, not because they forgot how to treat seniors. It's because the federal government makes it virtually impossible for them to care for seniors in the way that they believe is appropriate. Some of the services that doctors provide, the federal government doesn't even cover the cost of that service.
That's right.
So that every single senior who comes in with a certain diagnosis or a certain problem or requires a certain form of treatment, the physician knows that he or she will not even be paid for the cost of providing the service. That's not their time cost. That's not the generosity that physicians use, the altruism that they use to provide that care. That's the cost of having the nurse, turning on the lights, having the equipment, having the x-ray machine, having the MRI machine, having the tools necessary to solve the problem that patient has. And the federal government doesn't even cover those costs. No other business in this country is forced by the federal government to provide a service at something lower than cost.
Right.
And so you've got a whole system now that is crumbling, not because the doctors don't want it to succeed, but because the federal government is putting in place rules and regulations that make it so it is impossible to succeed.
Well, patients don't realize this, but no industry, no group of individuals are as over-regulated and controlled as physicians are. And it goes well beyond Obamacare. It goes to other laws that have come out of Washington that compel doctors to give away their services without any compensation on their part, just because a patient shows up and they can't be turned away. And that's something that doctors would do anyway, because doctors are good-hearted people, but the government is compelling them to do that. Or in terms of other government programs, like high tech, which was not part of Obamacare, but the part of the stimulus package, which makes doctors have to implement costly IT solutions that fit government regulations, otherwise they don't get paid.
Yeah, I oftentimes share this story with folks. I'm a third generation physician. My dad and my granddad were docs, and when my grandfather practiced medicine, I remember clearly that oftentimes he was paid for the services that he provided with all sorts of things, chickens and eggs and cords of wood. I remember the cords of wood because I stacked them out by his garage, paid for those services because people wanted to compensate their doctor, the doctor that they trusted and loved and cared for them, but they didn't have the monetary resources to be able to do so, but they had something else, and that was a system that worked at that time. Mm-hmm. When my dad practiced medicine, it was a time when there was kind of a social compact that those who had a little more paid a little more, and those who had a little less paid a little less, and everybody knew what was happening, and it worked. Both of those things now are illegal. In
yes.
fact, the second one is a felony. If your doctor charges you more or less for anything that he or she charges anybody else, that's a felony.
Yes.
The federal government stipulates that the physicians can't determine what the cost is.
Right, and if you want to charge somebody less, then they can. The federal government, if you take Medicare dollars or Medicaid dollars, they can come into your office, audit your charts, find one instance, calculate how many patients extrapolate, and then present you with a whopping bill that if you don't pay, the IRS is going to come after you.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating barter, and I'm not advocating a system where we charge some people more and some people less, dictated by the federal government.
No.
What I am saying is that the system now has become so complicated and so cumbersome and so run from the top that it is virtually impossible for physicians to be able to provide the care that they need.
And the losers are the patients.
If your listeners think about it, every single incident of care in this country, is subject to review by the federal government or by an insurance company. Every single thing. When you walk into the doctor's office, whether or not you sign a paper at the front desk, is a reviewable event for you and everybody
HIPAA.
Else. HIPAA. When you go into the exam room, whether or not your temperature is taken, whether or not your weight is taken, whether or not you're asked if you have any allergies, every single one of those things is reviewable by the federal government or insurance companies. What that means is that we have an incredible complex of individuals that have built up to be the regulation police to make certain that every patient that walks into your office, that you do what somebody else thinks is right for that patient, not what you think is right for that patient. We've gone so far down the road where it's not the physicians and the patients who are deciding care. It's other entities, including the federal government. And I believe it's the wrong direction, which is why we believe you got to put patients at the center. If you keep patients at the center, you get to the right answer.
Absolutely. I think that anybody who has been involved in policy or politics as you have, or just general health care, realizes that everything will work out if you just think about the patients.
Exactly. Exactly.
So let's talk about the other entitlement program, Medicaid. Indiana. Tell us about Indiana, how that works.
Indiana's got an incredible program. Mike Pence, who is the governor of Indiana and the former individual who served in the House of Representatives with me, and just a great, great guy. And what he did is put in place a system that puts patients at the center, allows much greater flexibility for Medicaid patients to have the kind of coverage that they want for themselves and for their family, not that the state government or the federal government forces them to buy. When you think about patients and you think about the kind of flexibility that people want, he has developed that and incorporated that, and it's resulted in greater satisfaction, higher quality of care, and greater access to care for the citizens of the state of Indiana.
We're going to just get into a few of those details after the break. You're in Doctor's Lounge with Hal Schurz and my guest, Representative Tom Price. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs.com.
4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Tom Price. Tom, we were just before the break talking about the Pence plan in Indiana, and my understanding is that it works because there's patient responsibility, actually. There's skin in the game, which right now is sorely lacking in healthcare with the third-party payment system. Yeah. And the way it works in Indiana is that the patients have a very modest copay when they go to see their doctor, but in exchange, they have money put in from the state into a health savings account that they control, and they actually become consumers.
Yeah. It is so exciting what's going on in Indiana, and I think it will become the model for other states. Think about the state of Georgia, our state, where we have the last figures that I looked, we have about 1.8 million individuals in this state on Medicaid. About two-thirds of those folks are healthy moms and kids. Two-thirds of that 1.8 million are healthy moms and kids for whom we could pay as a state cash. These are folks that don't have the resources to be able to gain the care that they need. But we could pay cash or write a check for every single incident of care that those kids and those moms need and save hundreds of millions, if not over $1 billion. $1 billion in this state alone by providing the kind of coverage, but in a different way. That's illegal now. The federal government refuses to allow that to happen. That's the kind of excitement that we have about the prospects and opportunities for real solutions in the future. We can solve the challenge of Medicare and make it so that it's safe and secure for this generation and future generations. We can solve the challenge of Medicaid if we think about that patient first, the end user first.
Absolutely, and I'm very much involved in the Medicaid population as a pediatric urologist. 50% of my practice is Medicaid. Mm. And I'm also very much involved in Children's Hospital here in Atlanta. We tried to get the state to split off children's care,
yes,
which the pediatric community would manage. Imagine if we were able to take care of all the kids who needed it in Georgia, and we could do it for cheaper, we could do it better, and there's just no flexibility to be able to do that. Yep. And those are the kind of solutions that we're all excited about and looking forward to, hopefully, in the next Congress and hopefully with the next president.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I know that your listeners hear this all the time. But think about what Dr. Schertz just said. They could care for the pediatric Medicaid population in this state for less money, with a higher quality and greater access to care, but it's not possible to do so because of the federal government rules. That's what we're saying. That's a society, that's a system of governance that doesn't respect the individuals who are utilizing the system. It may be wonderful, it may work just fine for all the well-intentioned bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., but it doesn't work for people, and that's where we need to concentrate.
So I'm gonna switch gears just a little bit. Healthcare is now a $2.9 trillion annual economy. It's now 18% of our GDP, I believe. So there's a lot of money. And when there's a lot of money, you just have to follow the money trail to find out who is really pulling the strings. And unfortunately, the big dogs at the table back in 2008 when all of this went down with Obamacare were insurance companies. Mm-hmm. They were pharmaceutical companies. They were the hospitals. The hospitals got written into the law provisions that really tilted the playing field against physicians. And right now, the preferred model for payment is getting skewed toward the hospitals, the accountable care organizations, which my listeners have heard many, many times us talk about on this show. And it's the physicians are actually now getting beaten down. I talked on our last show of December
about the article that came out in the Wall Street Journal by Scott Gottlieb about the end of private practice medicine and how in 2008 the trend was starting. 65% of doctors were still in private practice. Today that number is 35%.
Correct.
So where is this going?
Well, it's going in the wrong direction. And people say, well, what difference does it make to me? Why should I worry about that? Well, I believe, as I know you do, that if we destroy the independent private practice of medicine in this country, which is where the responsiveness to patients has occurred, it's where the quality has been driven in healthcare in this country. If we destroy that, we destroy healthcare in this country. That's why it's so important to preserve. That was the premise that Dr. Gottlieb, Scott Gottlieb, had in that article. It's what you've been talking about for years. It's what I've been talking about for years. And the reason that it gets destroyed is that when physicians are employed by somebody else who has of necessity, a different fiduciary responsibility and a different mission, other than just taking care of patients, which is what doctors do, then the whole system gets skewed. When doctors are employees, then do they answer that phone call at 5:01 p.m.?
No.
When the office closes at 5?
No.
And it's not because they don't want to. It's because it doesn't have any benefit to them at all in terms of being able to run their practice. Do they do the extra kinds of things that my dad and my granddad did and that you and I have done through our entire professional careers? It's a different mindset that occurs. If we want a system that is answerable to the federal government, then you get a system that has the federal government's priorities. If you want a system that's answerable to patients, then you put in place a system that allows patients and families and doctors to make those decisions, because then you get the kind of decisions that benefit patients most. So that's why we're fighting just as hard as we can. And I'm saddened and disappointed by the fact that much of this change has occurred when many of us have been fighting as hard as we can. So what we need to do, and I commend you so much for what you're doing at Docs for Patient Care and for this radio program, it's an education process for the American people. They need to understand what we're losing as a society if we move further in the direction of having physicians employed by, you name it, whoever it is. That independent private practice of medicine is so very, very important to the quality of health care in this country.
So how do we unshackle physicians who right now are burdened with the IT that they have to do?
Information technology,
the electronic medical record. We hear about this every other week. My co-host Mike Karuchik, who's an expert on this, talks about the horrors that are occurring because of it, and the dialogue has been, or the straw man argument has been set up that this is such a great thing because it will help us to coordinate care better. It will help us to take care of patients better, when in fact it really is just the opposite. It's paradoxically resulting in worse outcomes, worse patient care, because the things that get reported in the electronic medical record are not necessarily accurate depictions of what a patient's care or the problem is.
Or specific to that patient.
Or specific to that patient, or errors. Yeah. There's more errors made actually putting in electronic prescriptions than physically writing those prescriptions. So how do we level the playing field for doctors?
There's so many things that are so wrong with the information technology, the electronic medical record, that are being forced on physicians. And folks say, well, how can the government force them? Well, they force them by first dangling a carrot. They say, if you do what we want done and you check the boxes that we want checked, then we'll give you a little extra money. And then 2 or 3 years go by and we find ourselves this year, if you didn't do what we want done, oh, then we'll take a little money away, or we'll take a lot of money away.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars from large practices being kept by the federal government that are rightly those of the physician, because they provided care for patients.
And it's not reimbursement, it's payment. There's a false narrative that doctors get reimbursed. They don't get reimbursed, they get paid for what they do.
Paid for the services.
So,
now,
so,
So what we need to do, again, all of these answers, every single answer, every one of these questions centers on the patient. If the patient has the power in the equation, what we do in our bill is say that the patient owns their policy, regardless of who's paying for it. In an ideal world, that also applies to Medicare and Medicaid. So that the patient, that policy is money. That policy, it has value, it has worth. And the patient ought to be the one that can decide whether or not it goes in one direction or another, whether or not it's with this insurance company, or with Medicare, or with Medicaid, or with Aetna, or with the Blues, or with Kaiser, or with direct patient care, that is a new kind of system, or with the independent membership association that I have envisioned and we have in our bill. If patients are the ones that are deciding where that money goes to cover their lives and the lives of their families, then what happens is that the system becomes responsive to the patient, so that when you as a patient go into your doctor and your doctor is looking at a computer screen instead of you, and the nurse hasn't made eye contact with you yet, and she's asked 20 questions because she has to ask those 20 questions to fill out the form that the federal government dictates to them. If you are able to say, that's not the kind of care that I want, that's not the kind of responsiveness that I want from my caregiver, then you, what you will be able to do then is move your money, find a system that doesn't have those kind of burdens. And we need to have a system that's flexible enough and responsive enough to move in the direction that patients want it.
So in order to, going back to the physicians who are leaving private practice, because the playing field is so tilted against them, is there any hope that we can allow the playing field to once again get leveled? There are certain laws that are in place right now that make it impossible for doctors to compete against hospitals. The Stark laws, some of the antitrust laws. You know, doctors, you and I can't get in a room if we're not part of a same economic unit and talk about economics or plan to do things together to put up a facility. But hospitals can, insurance companies can. How can we hope to see that playing field get leveled?
Well, you've got to make it so that the greatest amount of flexibility and responsiveness to patients can occur. You mentioned the antitrust laws. People don't know this. If I was a member of an orthopedic practice that was small and then grew into a large practice. We, when I left 10 years ago, had over 60 or 70 physicians. Now it's a whole lot more than that. Multiple offices across the metropolitan area, and we grew. I mean, we liked all of our partners, there's no doubt about it, and it was a wonderful thing to do, but we grew because we were trying to get the critical mass to be able to fight on a level playing field with both the government and insurance companies. And it has worked to some extent, but what that does is mean that physician practices are modeling themselves in a way not necessarily to respond to the patient need, but to respond to the dictates of insurance companies and the dictates of the federal government. That again doesn't have the patient at the center. So if you have the greatest amount of flexibility, we ought to provide. Our bill, for example, says that a physician who treats Medicare patients and a patient in a Medicare system ought to be able to move in and out of that system voluntarily for an incident of care that they want. If a doctor wants to do a little more for that patient, but Medicare doesn't allow it, the Medicare patient and the doctor ought to be able to move out of that system for that incident of care. Right now, that's a felony. You can't do it. It's against the law. That's, again, a system that doesn't work for patients.
Well, we're all about patients here in the Doctor's Lounge, and we're going to wrap this incredibly informative seminar on health care and what's possible out of Washington in just a moment. This is the Doctor's Lounge with Hal Schurz.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schurz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my special guest, Tom Price. Tom, you were actually responsible for me. I was just going.
That's an ominous thought.
sorry to bring that to light. But I came to you 6 years ago, yeah, saying, I'm very worried about the direction of healthcare, and I needed to get involved in things. And you were the one who said, "We'll do something." And so you suggested that I get doctors together. Something that you said you had a hard time doing. And something that I decided that I was going to give a try to, and for better or for worse, here we are 6 years later with Docs for Patient Care, which has been to Washington, gosh, I can't even recall how many times we've been there with rallies and coming to the Congress and talking to people. And we came out with our health care plan in 2010, which was the physician's prescription for health care, mm-hmm, which I've given to you. Yep. I put in Paul Ryan's hand, I recall, back there, and he looked at all this and said, "This is really good stuff." And I'm going to just kind of run down some of these things once again to wrap this up really quick in this last segment before we say goodbye to you. So we talked about tax consideration in the number one thing was that individuals should receive the same tax consideration as corporations get,
yes,
for health care.
Yeah, this again puts the patient at the focus. Right now there's a tax incentive for employers to purchase health coverage for their employees because they can do it with pre-tax dollars. There's no similar incentive for an individual to purchase health coverage because they have to do it with post-tax dollars. So there's a financial disincentive to purchasing coverage. So we concur, and that's part of our piece of legislation. Now, Obamacare has kind of skewed much of this because there's another incentive on top of all of that for the employer mandate, and the penalty, the tax that employers will pay if they don't provide that coverage. That's another wrinkle that's occurring. But the tax, the penalty, is becoming less than the cost of providing the coverage. So a lot of folks are going to be shoved into the individual market that we talked about before, and the reason, the necessity of expanding that market so that folks don't get priced out of it.
National market for purchasing insurance, yeah, over the internet.
It absolutely vital. And the reason, again, for that is that people, we purchase health coverage, or we purchase car insurance and homeowners insurance from a gecko on the television, you know. So it may be in Minnesota, maybe in Nevada, maybe anywhere. There's no reason why we must purchase health coverage in our own state. Health insurance has always been regulated by the state, but that doesn't mean that you have to purchase it in that state. I wholeheartedly support health insurance being regulated at the state level because I think it's more responsive. But that doesn't mean that you as an individual in Georgia ought not be able to purchase something in Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina.
Can insurance commissioners talk to each other?
Sure.
And you can designate one plan to be centered in one state, and the other insurance commissioners can talk to each other.
In fact, the brilliance of our founders created an interstate compact that could indeed occur and could be utilized for something just like this.
Health savings accounts coupled with a high deductible wraparound insurance policy.
Extremely important. What this does is allow the patients much greater flexibility to be able to use their health care dollars, the dollars that are available for them to purchase their health coverage in a way that they deem to be most appropriate. It's one of the keys to expanding coverage and making it be responsive to the patients.
Market reform with price transparency.
Yeah, this frustrates patients, but it also frustrates physicians. If you ask your doctor by and large, how much does something cost? Mostly he or she doesn't know because they're not the ones that are determining what something, what they charge for something. Somebody else is dictating that, which means that it can't, the individual physician can't be responsive to the patient in that cost, and in that charge for that service. So those costs ought to be known. They ought to be known, but they also ought to be able to be controlled by the physician and the patient. When somebody else is dictating the cost, when the price fixing that has occurred in our system occurs to the point that it has right now, it means that the system's less responsive to patients.
And it, as an aside with regard to that, it's the obtuse way that reimbursement occurs right now, where, and this is the reason why physicians are selling their practices to hospitals or why hospitals are buying, because hospitals are able to get much more for the services that a doctor gives if they give it in a hospital setting than in their office.
It's astounding. When you if you go to a doctor's office and you get an X-ray or a test that is provided across the street from a hospital, and you went across the street to the hospital and had that same service and you compared those two bills, the vast majority of the time, and I mean 99%+ of the time, the hospital is receiving much more payment for that service than the doctor. There's some reasons that that is built up, but now it's been so distorted and now incentivizes the flow of physicians being employed by themselves to the hospitals.
And if, for the listeners out there, it doesn't matter whether or not you have a third party paying the bulk of it. If you're paying 10 times as much for a service, your copay is going to be 10 times greater if you get that service done in a hospital.
Correct.
So it's more money out of your pocket.
Yep.
We haven't talked about this, but medical liability.
Yeah, it's so important, and I wanted to mention it earlier on, and it slipped my mind, but we waste hundreds of billions of dollars, that's with a B, hundreds of billions of dollars in this country in the area of health care every single year, and the biggest way we waste it, I believe, is what's called the practice of defensive medicine. It's what I did, it's what you do, it's what every single doctor does. Doesn't hurt any patient, but what it does, it makes it so that if the physician's ever called into a court of law, they can honestly look the judge and the jury in the eye and say, I don't know what you wanted me to do because I did everything, when in fact everything is rarely necessary to either treat or to diagnose a patient. So what we recommend doing is saying, if a doctor does the right thing for a given diagnosis or set of symptoms, not based upon what Washington says, but upon what his or her peers say, what does the specialty society say? What does the urology society say? What does the pulmonology society say you ought to do for this diagnosis or that diagnosis? And if the doctor does the right thing, then they ought to be able to use that as an affirmative defense in a court of law. They ought to be able to say, this is what the patient had, this is what I was supposed to do, this is what I did, and allow the jury or the judge to make up their mind from that, as opposed to what we do right now, which is to say to the doctor, you've got to do everything. We don't say it explicitly, we say it implicitly. You've got to do everything in order to defend yourself in a court of law. Hundreds of billions of dollars. The estimates are up to $1 out of every $3 or $4 in this country.
One out of every four is what I've seen.
One out of every four, and you stated the figure before, $2.9 trillion spent in this country annually.
That's over $600 billion.
If you do the math, I think it's $725 billion. But that's $600, $700 billion, $800 billion, whatever it is, it's too much money to waste.
No. If you had that money, you can pay for health care for every individual. You don't have to worry about Obamacare.
You could take a tenth of that money and provide the services that we allow for in our bill.
So do you see a way that the federal government can incentivize states? Because there's a lot of ways that you can reform the medical liability environment. Every state may have their own solution. California has MICRA. Texas has their now constitutional tort reform. In Georgia, we had it. It got thrown out. So as has been the case in several other states. So if you can incentivize states with federal dollars somewhere else to implement a meaningful tort reform, do you think that that's doable?
Yeah, I think that's doable, but I think it also can be done at the state level as well, and the states ought to grab these reins. There's no reason why states ought not be able to move forward with this. We at the federal government ought to provide for a system that allows for the kind of lawsuit abuse reform system that I talked about. This is the way where we can save big dollars in the area of healthcare. We've got to change the culture of the practice of medicine. You don't do that by dictating to doctors and to hitting them over the head with a hammer and telling them what they must do. You do it by making it so that they can do what they know is necessary for their patient and no more.
We talked about Medicare and Medicaid already, and we've also talked about pre-existing conditions and medical information technology, which are all the tenets of the Docs for Patient Care prescription for healthcare reform. One thing that we won't have time to talk about today, and probably is not germane to this part of our platform, is trying to get rid of all of the over-regulation on physicians, where they have to recertify and they have to do maintenance of their licenses, which is something that's onerous. And I'm just saying it just to say it, but I want to spend the last 2 or 3 minutes, because that's all we have, is people talk about that now in this Congress the Republicans should go for a vote at the very beginning to repeal Obamacare, and I think I've heard different people's opinions about that. I'd like to hear yours, but what we can expect to see in 2015.
Yeah, I think it's I fought adamantly against Obamacare when it was being developed in 09 and 10, and the bill that we've talked about, the positive patient-centered piece of legislation that we've talked about today, grew out of our work at that time in 2009 and 2010. We absolutely must have another vote to repeal Obamacare, and the reason is that the vast majority of the American people appreciate and understand that this isn't what we ought to be doing. There are 42 new members of the House of Representatives on the Republican side of the aisle. Each and every one of them ran on a platform of repealing Obamacare. They need to be able to say to their constituents, I'm fighting as hard as I can for you. Now, the president will veto it if it gets to his desk. We understand that. That doesn't mean that you don't do it. It's important. We've had such a muddied mess in terms of politics and Washington over the last 4 years. I'm hopeful that this next 2 years will be an opportunity for the American people to see who's working as hard as they can to put up real solutions to the challenges that we face in so many areas, but especially in the area of health care. We talked about the 160 pieces of legislation that Republicans in the House put forward in the last Congress. I hope that we're able as a group to coalesce around those principles of accessibility and affordability and quality and choices and incorporate those things into a piece of legislation, a bill that will solve the health care challenges, and then do some targeted shots.
Employer mandate
is one of those things that dictates to employers what they must purchase, what kind of health coverage they must purchase for their employees. That's not responsive to patients. That doesn't make it a system that's easier for patients. There's an easy way to solve this, I believe, and that is to say to the president, okay, Mr. President, you believe that the employer mandate doesn't work because you've delayed it forever and ever and ever, so it clearly doesn't work. Why don't we simply make it so that any health care policy, any health coverage policy, that a state health commissioner or state health insurance department says is quality health care, health coverage, which is the way that we used to do it, had states define what health coverage was qualified for in their states. Why don't we say that shall satisfy the requirements of the employer mandate? That opens up the whole waterfront for the HSAs, for the wraparound care, for the high deductible policies that are so helpful and so important for so many individuals.
Well, you know, I think that this is, you know, the crux of where we need to go as physicians and as policymakers that are truly interested in quality care for every American. And Tom, it's been, you know, just a great privilege to have you here on the show today and educate our listeners and the public about what is going on in Washington and what we have to look forward to. I hope to have you back on the show at some point in the future.
Thanks, Hal, so much. It really has been great. I appreciate it and appreciate all the work that you and Docs for Patient Care are doing. If anybody wants to get in touch with us, we're at tom.house.gov, tom.house.gov.
Thank you, and you've been in the Doctor's Lounge.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.